Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Creative Disturbances. My name is Carissa Terranova. I'm Associate Professor of Aesthetic Studies here at UT Dallas, and my guest is Frieder Nacke. Tell us about yourself, Frieder.
I'm Frieder Nacke from Germany, Bremen in Germany. I'm a mathematician, a computer scientist, and occasionally an artist.
Occasionally. I think you are centrally an artist. But my questions come out of my research. I'm writing about art and biology on a book called Art as Organism. I'm interested in your writing. You talk about Max Benza, who influenced you. And then you also, in my class, you mentioned Georg Nies, his thinking. And both of them talk about the generative. So the first thing I wanted to know is the relationship between the algorithmic and the generative.
From a first point of view, they are the same. But then, of course, second view, they are different. In which way exactly is not so well known. The term generative art came up when the first exhibition of computer art, and let me call that algorithmic art, was staged in 1965. And Max Benza, at that occasion, started to use that term. He, you could say, invented it, generative art. He wanted to avoid the term program in that context. No, it seemed to be too mundane to him. Generative was more a surprise. What the hell is this?
Yeah. So more inventive or more raising it to like
to make a difference,
fine art, no? Or just to, okay,
to strike a difference.
Like something maybe avant-garde.
Right,
okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm interested in the relationship or the role the term plays in my research on biology. And so I'm wondering, is there a relationship between your thinking on the algorithmic, the generative, and then the also contemporary discourse on emergence?
Emergency is good. If you had insisted on a different term, you know, life, then I would clearly deny any relation between them. But when you write a program of modest complexity, let alone high complexity, and you now run it and observe its results, let's assume they are visuals, then you will be surprised. So something is emerging there that you, as the author of the program, were not aware of when you were writing the program. Is that automatically so? No, it's not automatically so. But in a very simple way, draw one circle on a sheet of paper. You will see one circle. Draw two, you will still see two. When it's 10, there may be already overlaps between those circles that make you wonder. If it's 1,000 circles, you will most likely actually identify only a few of them as circles and the others as something that has now emerged from the set of the circles.
Unintended.
Unintendedly.
Which brings me to the pressing question that was kind of contentious earlier today in the group of the relationship between the algorithmic, the digital, and the living. And so, because you seem to be kind of resistant to the idea that a computer is like a living being, or we can create living beings based on algorithmics or computer processing. Yet at the same time, a work of art has a living quality. So how do we reconcile those two things?
I like to think of a work of art as living in some sense. Yes. I do not like at all a comparison between us as living beings and the computer, and always think the computer and its program, its currently running program. Not at all. However, with the term from before, emergence, the computer behaving exactly the way it has been programmed, of course, also shows emergent capabilities. If we take that kind of technical term as strongly, weakly related to life, then I would have to admit there is something lively in the computer, or should I say, in the behavior of the computer with a program. However, I think the split, the step from not living matter to living matter, although it must in history have been a gradual development, nowadays is so strong that I resist looking at us as human beings in terms of machines in order to defend the human responsibility, the human weaknesses against the always equal, predictable, and anticipative behavior of a mechanism or another machine.
And then the machine, that said, it's anticipatory and seems to mimic a lot of our behaviors. What does, I mean, so it's not living, but what can we, does it tell us something about what we call consciousness?
Yeah.
Is that too big of a question? Not for
It is a big question. It's a big question for me also, Carissa. What I really resent is throughout the ages that the human beings in their attempt to understand their life, and that had always meant the life of the human in general, is always an attempt to use something that is objective and produced by the humans themselves, which is machines, tools, to use that as a means to explain our own behavior. No? I'm not a system of pipes, as in times, you know, when they had discovered the blood circulation was the model. Later, around World War II, it was, and even before a little, it was the cybernetic feedback systems. Mm-hmm. We are not feedback systems. Yes, of course, we react to something, whether we like it or dislike it in some particular way. No, but we are not cybernetic systems.
But if we think of ourselves as open cybernetic systems by way of technology, doesn't that help us to understand that consciousness is not contained but extended into the world?
I believe, and I'm following somebody else here, a mathematician, that humans can be identified in a categorical sense as semiotic animals, semiotic animals, animals that are capable of semiosis. Mm-hmm. And your great countryman, Charles Sanders Peirce, described consciousness as the infinitely continued semiosis.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could, we cannot, continue and continue and continue in our sign processes in which we are emerged all the time. If we could continue that to the end, then we would come up with consciousness. I use the term semiotic machine for the computer. And these two, by sharing in some way that would have to be explained, I'm not going to do it now, semiotic, they both take part in semiosis, sign processes, we differently because of consciousness than the computer.
Do other living creatures have semiosis?
They do.
Right.
They do in an always restricted way, no? Mm-hmm. By, how is it called, instinct.
Maybe we just don't understand their full breadth of semiosis, and we see it as a limitation, perhaps it is our own limitation.
Yeah, you're right. No, I'm aware.
This is what
I
hope and feel that machines teach us, and not just digital machines, but analog machines.
Yeah.
They teach us of our own limitations in terms of understanding consciousness among all creatures.
Yeah. Peirce, in his semiosis, has a great idea, I believe. It's the start of postmodernism in the last years of the 19th century. He uses, as everybody else, the notion of a sign as a something standing for another. That other may be far away or not existing at all or only a thought. But the sign is one standing in for a second. He, however, purse, adds a third component to the concept of a sign that he calls the interpretant. And the interpretant is the result of a process of interpretation of those pairs, you know, that appear, mm-hmm. one standing in for a second. We are free through our consciousness, through our experience, through our lives, to interpret each of these pair situations differently.
Right.
In each and every moment.
Does this distinguish us from the computer?
It does.
Our ability to...
Absolutely,
to,
no?
Distinguish and interpret signs as opposed to signals.
Yeah. Yeah.
You made that distinction in the talk earlier today.
Exactly. Yes. No, that's right. The difference.
Yeah. Right. Well, great. So I guess that's about it. We've gone very deep, very quickly. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And on to the next rhyme. Thank you, Frieder.
Thank you.